Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African Jamie Lee Sexton is a powerhouse vocalist and versatile artist who has mastered both the guitar and the piano. Jamie enrolled at AFTA and majored in live performance and quickly garnered attention for her natural stage presence, winning Best Actress twice. Her diverse skill set saw her thrive in both film and music. Jamie Lee's breakthrough came in 2010 when she competed in Idols and made it to the prestigious top eight, cementing her place as a force to be reckoned with in the South African music scene. Known for her rich emotive voice and ability to cross musical boundaries, her signature sound evolved into a blend of new age pop with elements of soul and contemporary styles. After Idols, Jamie Lee collaborated with Soul Candy's DJ Parker, forming the group Audiophonic, which fused Afro House, soul and hip-hop, taking her live performances to venues across South Africa. In 2014, Jamie Lee founded the Sextons, a dynamic live act that captivated audiences at some of Africa's most renowned music festivals, including Opikopi, For Mozambique, Splashy Fen, and more. In 2017, Jamie Lee chose to focus on her solo career, embracing a fresh artistic direction with a focus on personal songwriting. Her 2022 EP, Medicine Woman, which debuted at number one on the iTunes chart, resonated with fans and critics alike, with subsequent singles continuing to chart and achieve significant success. Jamie Lee's music was recognized in 2023, earning her multiple nominations for the Basadi Music Awards, including Best Songwriter, Best Music Video, and Best Pop Artist. Later that year, she took home a EVMA award for Best Music Video. Jamie Lee continues to release top 10 charting singles on multiple radio stations and radio charts, and shares a stage at musical festivals alongside the likes of The Chainsmokers, Kendrick Lamar, and more. And she's also collaborating with artists as such as producer CT and DJ and legend Moby Dixon. Up next on Celeb Savant, recorded live in studio at Solid Gold Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, is Jamie Lee Sexton. And joining me today, we have Jamie Lee Sexton.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good, and you? Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you too. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So for the audience at home, or the listening audience, yeah. I met Jamie Lee at the Forest Sessions Music Festival a few weeks ago, and we connected, had some fabulous photos. And now we've connected, now you're here on the podcast, so thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Let's rewind. What age, whether it was a child or teenager, did you feel cool? You want to be in the creative music world, and how did that journey progress to where we are?
I started singing at the age of four. I was 4 years old. That was the first time that I realized, or rather that my parents realized that I could sing. And I was taught the song Unforgettable by Nat King Cole.
Yes.
And that was my first song, and I never stopped singing. And then probably about at the age of nine, I started learning. I taught myself how to play guitar. And then after that, it was piano. And throughout that, I was really, really interested in poetry from a very young age, which at like 9 or 10 years old is very strange. You know, for the average 9 or 10 year old, yeah, they're not interested in poetry, yeah, like at all. And I had an amazing English teacher, and he showed me some beautiful novels and poetry and books, and I started writing. And he actually entered me into poetry competitions, and I got published. It wasn't taken seriously because no one ever thought, you know, that it was not almost possible, but like, I don't think they believed that I wrote it.
Oh, okay.
To be honest, yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it was almost like it was a very strange part. I did start writing, and some of my poems got published, which was amazing. And then from there, because I started playing instruments, I started putting music to poetry. And that's how I started to compose, and that's how I started to write music.
Okay, so you referenced that they didn't think it was you who wrote it. Mm. Did you know that at the time, that the people thought, okay, it wasn't you?
Look, my family obviously like did believe me, but in the beginning they didn't. Like they were like, I don't know, like, did you really write this?
It's
the age and what I was writing about didn't seem connected.
Oh, yes. Okay, I understand.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So it was almost not believable, but then I kept doing it. And then they were like, oh, I actually think she is writing this. Do you know what I mean? So that's how it started. And poetry was, I mean, I still write loads of poetry and still send my stuff in and all that stuff. It is really one of my first loves. That's how I started singing. And that's how I realized that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
For people who may not know.
Yes.
Who may be, for whatever reason. Because these days with technology and that and people stuck on the phone, what is the difference between a poem and writing a song?
Poetry can be in any sort of, it can be any length. It can be really, really short. It can be three lines. It can be two pages.
Okay.
But the thing is about a song, there's a basic song structure that you work with, and that usually has like 8 steps. So you've got introduction. You go into verse, so you are telling a story, but when it comes to your rhyming and lyrical content, it's very different to writing poetry, because poetry has a certain rhythm and writing music has a certain rhythm, because obviously with music, you are collaborating with the instrument, whereas poetry, look, in your head, you sometimes are, you know, like with me, I always had an instrument in mind, but with poetry, it doesn't always have the same structure as a song. So structurally, they are different. Content can be the same, but the wording and the way that you deliver it is different.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's dive into specifically your creative process with music. So from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song.
Yes.
Is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Do you write by yourself or collaborate with others? Let's unpack that.
For me, writing is always different. But what does stay the same is I usually write best at like between 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll have an idea, like especially, and it never, the lyrics don't come first or the melody, like it usually changes. You know, like sometimes I'll think of a line. I'll be walking outside, going to get a coffee, and I'll think of something. Or I'll see somebody do something and I'll go, wow, like that's so beautiful. Life is very, very inspiring for me. And then I'll wake up at 1 or 2 in the morning and then I'll sit and write. And then I'll finish at like 7 or 8 and then obviously go to bed. Definitely need sleep after that. But life inspires me. I write from my own life experience also. So all of my, what happens to me in my life, what I go through, what I've seen, I write to my future self. I have written to my future self quite a few times, but I take pride in writing about my own life because I think that that's the most honest that I can be. And sharing my life experiences with people, I think is important because a lot of the time, you know, people feel alone. Sometimes, you know, I get a lot of, DMs and stuff like this where people are really going through the same thing. And then it makes sense that, you know, that's why I write for that reason.
I'm bringing this up because I find this quite interesting. I think it'll be interesting to hear your observations. So I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way people process information.
Correct.
Every person processes information differently.
Yes.
And the unfortunate thing is many people in the world are assuming that everyone else is experiencing information or processing information the same as them.
Correct.
Which is never the case.
Yeah.
Now, for the listeners, there part of NLP is a section called processing, which is the way people process information.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a dominant one, a secondary, and tertiary, and there are 3 of them. So for the listeners, they're visual people, those people create pictures of what they're hearing. So they, as I'm talking, they'll be seeing a picture in their mind of what I'm explaining.
Yes.
Auditory people, it's about the words, understanding the word, putting the word into the sentence, understanding the sentence, and so forth. Then you've got kinesthetic people. So that's, again, people who process information and the body language, the tone of voice, the energy, all of those different elements. Now, focusing specifically on music.
Yeah.
Because it might be different in other areas of your life. But music specifically, when you're listening to a song of your own finished or completed or of other artists, are you creating a picture? Are you hearing the words? Or is it about the feeling?
That's such a great question. Funnily enough, what I realized, I think it was about 2 years ago, when I write music, every single song has got different colors on it. And
sorry, wait, is it colors you see or your colors you literally put on it?
So I put on it because that's what I saw.
Okay. Okay.
And I didn't actually know that this was a thing.
Yes.
But when I hear music, I see colors.
Synesthesia, I think it's called.
You're probably right.
Yeah, there's some word like that. Yeah.
So that is definitely the way that I listen to music. And if I go back to my books, because I still write physically, I have to write the song.
Yes.
Otherwise, I mean, if I do it on my phone, it just feels yucky.
Yeah.
And I always have a lot of colors. I have, like, in my studio, I have lots of different colors, and the song becomes a color and many different colors. So when it comes to that, I see, in my mind's eye, I see a lot of color, but I think I'm like a little bit of all three because I also feel a lot.
Mm.
You know, I experience the world in a very emotional way.
Yeah.
So I think probably a little bit of all three, if that's possible.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah. But when you're listening to songs by other artists.
Yes.
Are you able to just relax and listen to it for what it is? Is always your, why are you laughing? Or is your technical creative brain unpacking everything?
So I have to tell my brain to switch off, because when I listen to other artists, I'm immediately listening to the instrumental part and how it was composed. I'm listening to the notation, to the chord progressions. So funnily enough, where I really enjoy and listen to music just to enjoy and love is in my car. I love listening to music in my car. Even when I get home at night, if a good song is still playing, I will not get out of the car. I will sit and I will wait for that song to be done.
Mm.
So I think in my car, I love listening to music, in a loving way. But yeah, it is tough because I'm hearing so much. I think the thing is I'm hearing the layers of the song. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I can physically hear what they've done in the production or.
Yeah. Okay, so I love me a CD.
Yeah.
I love the aesthetic of holding something. For me, it's an energy exchange for you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you've done.
Yeah.
I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the listening from song one to whatever number.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're aware, massive, massive resurgence of physical, not really in South Africa because we don't have
overseas,
but overseas. Last year alone in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. About 3-4 months ago, a vinyl factory reopened in Asia that had been closed for 50 years.
Really?
CDs in the UK. So in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge the exchanges of for tax purposes. I'm not sure exactly
okay.
in what way.
Yeah.
But vinyls have always been in that basket. But because of the upsurge of CDs again, that is now back in the basket.
Really?
And it's not the older nostalgic people buying them. It's actually the teenagers. The
yes.
late teens, the early 20s that are diving into that world.
That's amazing.
And then we also have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. So
yes.
what are your perceptions of the landscape at the moment?
Look, the thing is, I love having something physical. Like even the other day, because I have vinyl and I have quite a few vinyls that I've collected over the years. But you also get this like... It's vinyl with tape deck.
Yeah, I've
with
seen
CD.
That. Yeah,
you know,
I've
like
seen that.
The
I've
whole
seen that. Yeah,
spiel.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would love to hear what a tape would sound like again. Do you know what I mean? Like there is something amazing about it and vinyl. I do think that it's a very niche thing. I personally don't believe that it'll become a completely mainstream thing again because the likes of Spotify, Deezer, Apple, whatever it is, the music is on you, with you, all the time. It's more of a collector's idea to own the CD. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, if I go to a gig of any artist, and I've gone throughout the years, I definitely buy a T-shirt. Like, that's me.
Yeah.
I think I have, like, over 200 band T-shirts.
Oh, wow.
Artist T-shirts. It's my thing. I collect them. I buy them. I absolutely love it. And the thing is, I think going to a show... Buying a CD is incredible. I would do it if they had it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
I don't know if it will become as mainstream as what it was in the 90s. I don't know. I know that vinyl has just kicked off and it's huge overseas. I know. I think that digital will, I don't know. Yeah, I think it will be king for a very, very, very long time.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Everything. I think performing live for me, it really brings me back to... my roots, it's very, very important for me to perform live because it's my connection. It's my connection with the audience. It's my moment to experience my own music. And also I think that performing live gives people a platform to see my soul. I think that that's most important because for me, singing has always been about the soul and a soul connection. And I always say that music is what emotions sound like. Yeah. Okay. So for me, that's really important to be able to do. It's like part of my, it keeps me sane to perform live and to gig and to physically play, you know, guitar, doing all of this, doing that. Yeah. It's everything.
What do you mean by it gives you a chance to experience your music? What do you mean by that?
To play it live.
Oh, okay. So to.
Yeah.
So okay.
To experience my own music. You see, the thing is when you create and you record and it's all around you and you hear it all the time, but you don't get to fully experience it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. So it gives me like an opportunity to actually feel the music out, you know, when you perform new music, you have to learn to get to know it, you know, and especially if there's an audience and you like gauging it, it's a brand new experience, which I think is very cool.
So I'm that person who's right up in front. I'm dancing. I'm jamming. I'll take my cell phone out for a couple of songs, a couple of photos, and I put it away.
Yes.
A lot of times these days, people are so busy in their phones, posting, tweeting, whatever. And in fact, when I do my videos and stuff, I don't post them. It's like, okay, that's something for later when I get home or the next day.
Yes.
But oftentimes, as I already mentioned, they'd be posting and videoing and whatever.
Mm.
You reference that connection and that energy and between yourself and the audience. Do you not feel that by them being on the phone, doing whatever they're doing, takes away for that? Or it's just where society is at this time?
Look, I think it is where society is. There's nothing you can say or do about it. It'll never change. Because you see, people want to capture a moment in time for themselves. And that's the easiest way to do it.
Mm.
You know, they can go back to that. And if they post it, they'll get a memory of it. And it's in archives or whatever it is. So I understand if people didn't have phones and they were just looking at you perform, I think it would be incredible. I really think it would be incredible if that was a possibility. But I do still feel the connection. And you see, the thing is through the phone, interestingly enough, they are looking at you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know it's not like, it's not one-on-one.
Yes.
It's not this, but it is there. And that's just where we are right now. If it was the other way around, I would love it if they would just take phones and not allow them into concerts or venues. I think it would be incredible, but, I don't mind it so much. Yeah.
And so what's coming up next over the next few months?
So I've just released my brand new song. It's called Goodbye and Good Luck. I also just came back from Durban. I had a tour in Durban, which was amazing. And what I've done is that I've set out to do tours across South Africa, and it's called the I Love Tour. So I started with I Love Cape Town, and then I did I Love Durban. We're going to go to different places in South Africa, and that's what we are busy planning now. And definitely more music, hopefully going up into Africa, overseas, doing performances overseas. So that's what's ahead in 2025.
So is the, you mentioned the new single. So is it going to be a body of work of a full album?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I've released a lot of singles, I'd say like in the last year and a half. So 2023, I released quite a few. And all of that is going to be a culmination of a body of work, which I think in 2025 will be completed. I'm always writing and I have songs, you know, banked. You know, it just depends on what works. Because obviously, you know, we work about 3 months in advance. So we have to, you know, sort of see which one will work for which release. But an album in 2025, I definitely think will happen.
You've referenced these singles that you've released. So now, I know that albums have a story.
Mm.
There's a theme or there's a story.
Yeah.
In releasing these songs, are you keeping in mind the full album and what that story will be? Or when you get to the album, may there be a whole batch of other songs that you have released that don't sort of fit in that would be lend itself to another album? Or you're seeing how it goes?
I always have a story in mind when it comes to an album because an album has to speak. You know, it's for me, it's like a book. It has to speak. The songs that I have so far, I think definitely speak to the story that I'm trying to tell.
Okay.
The songs that I've banked, I will choose which ones fit into that story.
How do you know, and I found this interesting, how do you know which songs to release as a single and ones that will just be, and I don't like the word album filler because no song is an album filler. All songs and all albums are brilliant.
I agree.
And there's been time taken to create them and energy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Again, they're not better, the singles, but how do you know, okay, this will be a single and this will just be one that would be on the album?
How I usually work is I have a sense and I have a feeling that it'll do really well as a single. But you see, in saying that, you know, I've had songs on my albums and I didn't even push for them to be a single, and they just shot up and they became something. So you don't really know.
Yeah.
In our industry, there's a formula, which is not really a formula. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that there's a formula to anything, because there is a lot of spontaneity in it. At the end of the day, it's art. You can't really tell people what to like or what not to like. Yeah. They will decide that. So when it comes to that, I mean, you sometimes have a sense and you push that. I really push to never underestimate the intelligence of your audience. So they will decide what they like or what they don't.
Yeah.
But I can always suggest it. And if it takes, it takes. And if they like it, they like it. But sometimes they like something completely different. And I'm like, okay. Well, okay. You go for it. Enjoy it.
We were discussing before we started recording that I've been following the music charts since I was very little.
Yes.
And it's quite interesting because, like I said, I've been following the American charts and I've been following the UK charts.
Yeah.
The UK charts are quite consistent. So, for example, if Kylie's had a top 10, she'll always have a top 10 or she'll have a number one album.
Yes.
Or whichever the artists are. You know,
yeah.
The strong ones will keep pushing.
Yes.
Whereas in the US, like, it was pop in the 80s and there was like the grunge and rock in the 90s, but still pop. Now, it's like for the last 10 years, 11 years, it's just hip hop.
Yes.
And a bit of country.
Yes.
So Katy Perry had like 7 number ones in a row. She doesn't even get to the top 100 anymore.
Yeah.
And I just find it bizarre that how fickle some countries are with their tastes compared to others, because some countries were like, okay, we like this, but we'll keep on pushing and enjoying that. But others are like, no, you no longer exist. And another interesting thing is that I was reading an article. So the article stated, not males, females only. There are a couple of radio stations in the UK. If a female artist is over the age of 30, they deem them irrelevant. And will not play their music because they think they're no longer relevant. So when Kylie came out with Padam Padam last year, the radio stations refused to play them. But then she blew up on social media and TikTok with it. So now they were forced to because she's not relevant because she's 55. And this has been a consistent thing, because I was reading Bananarama's autobiography.
Yes.
And when they were about 23 or 24 back in the 80s, the record label dropped them and said, you're no longer relevant because you're now over the age of 24, 25. But it's more prevalent with females than males, which I think is bizarre.
Yes.
But the point I'm trying to make is that, and it's just about allowing the art and the music to pass through.
Yeah.
And it will, if it has to be, and it will, because music is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is energy.
Yeah.
Gatekeepers and control is not energy. Because my definition of control is that when someone says they've got something under control, generally when life happens, they fall apart. Because...
Yeah, that's very true.
My definition of control is that I see a person trying to hold on to this energy and keep it in one place. And they can't even see that energy. They can't even feel it.
Yes.
So how can they ever hold on to it and think that they can control it?
Yes.
So this is just your thoughts on the things that I've just been saying.
Yeah, of course. Look, I think that a lot of industry standards that used to be in the 2000s and the 90s, I think that that's falling apart a little bit, because, you know, you've got artists like Sia. You know, you didn't even see her face and she's definitely over 40.
Yes.
And she's incredible. There's another female artist, her name is LP.
Yes.
Incredible, incredible artist. So I think that it is falling away. I mean, obviously there will be those sticklers that are like 25, you're irrelevant, whatever. But it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the scope, they just released Grammy
nominations.
And I don't think that the nominations have been this way in many, many years, because it used to be male dominated, and album of the year, song of the year, pop song, all the main categories, at least 4 or 5 of them are females.
Yes.
And it's not that I'm saying it because I'm female. It's because it's right. I just think that it's right. And I think that it's about time. Because, like, as you say, America has been listening to hip hop for like the last 11 years. And that was male dominated. Predominantly, it was male dominated. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think there are many, many female hip hop artists that should be at the forefront. I think that they are coming up even more. And I think it's amazing. But I think that in all categories, I mean, even like Beyonce with a country, Taylor, Sabrina, Chappell Roan, all of them are doing such different things and representing different women, different kinds of women.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. Different colors, sexuality. I think it's incredible. And I think it's about damn time. So hashtag. I'm very happy, yes.
Hashtag, drop that mic.
Yeah.
But we're keeping the mic on.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so I love this game. I know I've had to ask you this question in 5 minutes, 10 years, 50 hours.
Okay.
I'm not saying favorite, okay? I'm saying top of mind.
Okay.
If you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists, or if you can't think of specific songs, just 5 artists that you're tapping to and push play, who would they be? And if you have the song's titles, what would they be?
Okay, so at the moment, a song that I'm completely in love with, I think it is lyrically, sonically, vocally, everything about it is incredible. It's called Sweet Love by Anita Baker. Then I've been listening to a lot of old music. Someone that I've been obsessed with this year, just in terms of lyrical content and writing, is Stevie Nicks.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been listening to a lot of Stevie. Who else have I been listening to? Oh, definitely two artists that I've been loving at the moment is Chappell Roan and Sabrina Carpenter. So that's like 4. And then the fifth, I would say probably Biggie, Notorious Big.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I've been listening to him a lot, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Nice mix again.
Yeah.
Different crossovers.
Yeah.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say to the audience?
Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for listening and supporting this wonderful podcast. If you enjoy any of my music, please go listen to it on Spotify and Apple Music. And always remember that music starts as art, and as artists, that's all that we want to do. So consume it as art, and keep supporting local if you can.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.